DW Africa Link.
8 decades of the United Nations General Assembly, 8 decades of lofty declarations, global pledges, and the promise of collective action. As the world's leaders gather once again in New York for the UN General Assembly, the African continent faces a critical question. Is this just another pilgrimage of massive delegations chasing the bright lights of Manhattan, or is it finally Africa's moment to reposition itself at the center of the global agenda? With the youngest population on Earth, vast natural resources, and a growing voice in geopolitics, Africa holds the keys to the future. But will it demand a fairer seat at the table or remain a spectator in an institution that was never built with it in mind? This UNGA at 80 is more than just a ceremony. It's a chance for Africa to define whether it's merely attending history or shaping it. That's what's coming up. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from and on Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
The United Nations General Assembly celebrates its 80th session this year, 8 decades of bringing together world leaders, including those from Africa. Yet the continent continues to voice concerns about underrepresentation and its role on the global stage. This year's assembly, themed Better Together, 80 Years and More for Peace, Development and Human Rights, comes at a time when Africa faces ongoing conflicts and developmental challenges. So how can Africa reposition itself amid renewed calls for global solidarity, multilateralism, and collective action for people and the planet? Well, my colleague DW's Isaac Mugabe has been speaking to our guests. Security analyst Fidel Owusu Amakye and international relations expert Michael Kwadwo Ketia to share their insights on this edition of the Africa Link podcast. He started off first with Michael Kwadwo Ketia. Take a listen.
What should African leaders expect at this year's UN General Assembly?
The United Nations General Assembly, on paper or theoretically, is supposed to be a common platform for all member states, not just to express their grievances, but it's supposed to be a common platform for global consensus, discussion building on matters that affect the overall interest of all states alike, whether powerful or less powerful, whether developed or underdeveloped, whether rich or poor, whether north or south, whatever that it is, every single issue that is supposed to be discussed at the UN General Assembly is supposed to be an issue of monumental concern to every state on earth and every member state of the UN General Assembly. So in essence, African countries should look up to discussions that do not only prioritize or address the needs of a specific region of the world. It should be one of global consensus that addresses the needs of all member states with African interest considered as well.
Mr. Amachi Owusu, what should African leaders expect at the UN General Assembly?
Yeah, so since 1945, the UN General Assembly has been in place. And year in, year out, we've found different leaders from different places all over the world coming to speak their minds. It is one of the places where even leaders that are hostile to the host state, United States, get an opportunity to speak. Until recently, there was no issue of U.S. trying to ban some leaders from attending. And even if they did, it didn't really hold. So it is an important event. And African countries, so most of these countries who had gained independence after the establishment of the UN system in 1945 have also had the opportunity over the years to speak their minds. So there's nothing unusual except that there is a new scramble for Africa that has been going on in the past decade and over. And it looks like the global competition for African resources, which has led to some influence in the political arena, is going to be intensified in the coming years. And African leaders perhaps will need to pay attention to these dynamics and tell the world what they think about it, so that global actors who are interested in coming to Africa or who are involved in this competition will know what the African opinion or the position of Africa is.
Yes, and rightly, like you say, but most of the countries where these resources, the scramble for these resources are always taking place, are involved in conflict. You know, how challenging is this going to be for external actors to gain access to these minerals, let's say like in the DRC or even in the Sahel?
Among the most difficult situations that we have in Africa are these conflicts. And if you take the DRC, the second largest land mass or the second largest country in Africa, and you find so much resources, coltan, cobalt, all the critical minerals are found there. And in fact, that has also meant that the various factions or groups within the country are competing for these resources, trying to be the suppliers of these resources to the global supply chain, which is very lucrative. And that has resulted in deadly conflict. And currently, we are seeing the M23 rebellion in Eastern Congo. We are in West Africa. We have extremism. We have communal clashes. We have banditry. In the Horn of Africa, we have intrastate clashes and a whole lot of things happening. Now, you cannot exploit resources in the midst of danger or conflict. And so in this UN General Assembly, that will also be brought to the fore, because I'm expecting to hear from the president of DRC, Felix Tshisekedi. I'm also expecting to hear from leaders like the Ethiopian Prime Minister Ahmed Abiy Ahmed and the Egyptian President LCC, because there's also this conflict over the Nile, which is also a very or an important resource, water resource in Africa. And coming to West Africa, I would like to hear from the military regimes that have recently broken away from the West African bloc, ECOWAS, and other dynamics in the region, especially even from the Nigerian president. He is in charge of the largest country in terms of population, which is also experiencing various types and, I mean, kinds of conflict. We are talking of separatism, and we have it in Nigeria, southeast. We are talking of terrorism and the northeast. We are talking about banditry, and you find it in Nigeria's northwest. And even interreligious clashes. These are in central Nigeria, in the administrative capital and other areas, other states in central Nigeria. So these are the many things that are happening and which global actors will be observing. And in fact, as we have come to know, foreign policy statements of leaders amount to foreign policy of countries they represent. And so whatever these African leaders are going to say will communicate a lot to those who want to scramble for our resources or are scrambling for our resources, and other factors, including the conflict situation and the general security situation. And you talk of security, you're even still talking about food security, something that has come to the fore recently. South Sudan, many of Central African countries, the Sahel areas, and the Horn of Africa, the issue of food security is also going to be paramount.
I mean, most of the leaders, they have been pushing, African leaders have been pushing for equal representation. What are some of the obstacles you see, briefly, that are preventing countries from gaining permanent seats, or Africa getting a permanent seat at least on the UN Security Council, in your view?
In any international relations class, one of the first concepts you are introduced to is the concept of power balancing. When three people on the left-hand side are so powerful, and they feel that if they allow the other two people or the other three people on the right-hand side to amass such power, they will challenge the authority And by challenging the authority, they will lose that influence over them. That has been the bane of Africa's diplomatic advocacy at the UN General Assembly, and also that has been the bane of Africa gaining a permanent seat at the UN Security Council. Now, to put it into proper context, you know, for Africa or the UN Security Council, which we know that it has a 5 permanent member positions or arrangements, and the 5 permanent members are the United Kingdom, France, Russia, China, and the almighty United States of America. We know that even for these 5 permanent seats at the UN Security Council to be expanded to accommodate any other country as a permanent member, there has to be a charter amendment, because the United Nations was established by a guiding document, which we call the UN Charter. And that charter amendment requires that 2/3 majority. So if there are 193 member states now, at least 2/3 of them should vote that, yes, we should expand the permanent seats at the UN Security Council from 5 to 7, or from 5 to 10, or any other number. Now, Africa may have to convince all the other member states. They could be Europeans, they could be Latin American countries, they could be North American countries, they could be Asian countries, Southeast Asian countries. Name them. Africa would have to convince them to buy into this ideology of why Africa deserves a seat at the UN Security Council. That is one hurdle on its own, the 2/3 amendment majority requirement. Then the other thing is that even if Africa succeeds at getting 2/3 of the 193 member states as it stands now to vote for them to be part of the Security Council, it needs this resolution would need a ratification by the 5 permanent members, UK, the United Kingdom, France, US, China, and Russia. And I laid the foundation that these countries have never and are not willing to share their power with other member states of the United Nations. So in essence, you can lead all the advocacy you want. You can convince all the people you want to buy into your idea of deserving a seat at the Security Council. However, at the end of the day, it comes down to the same old powerful 5 figures as a judgment on your fate. And that is going to be a difficulty. And then on another thing we have to look at is that the P5 members, they simply put, they are not willing to share power with any other member of the General Assembly to become a permanent member. Emphasis is on a permanent member of the Security Council. They are not ready to share power. And these 3 issues are a major obstacle. And then even within Africa itself, there appears to be lack of consensus within Africa on even who or which country, or a criteria for selecting a country or 2 countries, as the Ezulwini consensus agreed 2 permanent member states seats for African countries. There is no consensus on which country should represent the continent. Should it be based on economic and military strength? Should South Africa be considered because of its economic might? Should Egypt be considered because of its military might in Africa? Should Nigeria be considered because it is the most populous country on the continent? Should Ghana be considered because Ghana was the pioneering state, not just the independent states in sub-Saharan Africa, but it was the pioneering state that invested so much and fought so much for the liberation of other African countries? All these things are there that hinders Africa's attainment of a permanent seat at the UN General Assembly. Now, within Africa itself, aside the lack of consensus, there appears to be what I call the unreasonable mitigation and differences in the continent. Now, let's take ECOWAS for instance. We know that ECOWAS, per its creation and foundational principles, was supposed to be a 16 member state. Along the way, one left, it became 15. Now, about 3 years ago or so, the 3 Sahelian states, Mali, Niger, and then Burkina Faso, left ECOWAS. Now, if you look at the land size or mass of these 3 countries compared to that of the other 15 members, Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso alone, their total land size or mass constitute about 51.7% of the total land size or mass of the entire ECOWAS block. So how does ECOWAS go into any negotiation table, even at the AU level, to go and negotiate regionally when three countries with about 51.7% of its landmass have deserted or left the bloc to go and constitute what they call the Alliance of Sahelian States? So these are some of the difficulties. Africa itself is not well represented and well united.
Now, let's try to kind of drift or change the page. I mean, you know, the UN General Assembly is where all African leaders will gather, rather all leaders, world leaders, including the African leaders, everyone with their interests, and of course, not ignoring what's happening around the world. To be specific now, how do geopolitical tensions like the Russia and Ukraine war or the war in Gaza going to affect Africa's visibility and agenda at the UN General Assembly?
All right. So, ordinarily, one would think that because the conflict in Ukraine and in Gaza are claiming so much lives, tropical issues, occupying global headlines, it will put Africa on the back burner. No, that is not the situation. For instance, how does Africa see Gaza, the situation in Gaza? And I'll tell you that recently, or in the past days, we found global North countries or Western countries declaring their support for the Palestinian state or recognizing Palestine. Now, the situation here is that in the case of Africa, many African countries or most African countries already recognize Palestine. So what is novel to the West in this new recognition of Palestine is something of old to Africans. We've always recognized Palestine, and this two-state solution has been the agenda. In fact, in the case of my country, Ghana, whichever political party is in power would not matter. The policy of Ghana or foreign policy of Ghana towards the Palestinian crisis or the Israel-Palestinian crisis has been the two-state solution. So I don't think there's going to be any other shift, except that maybe some leaders are going to condemn Israel more this time. But in terms of the conceptualization or the expectation of Africans, it has always been the two-state solutions, and I'm not going to see anything change. But in the case of Ukraine, much has changed. When Russia first invaded Ukraine, at the UN General Assembly, many African countries supported Ukraine in a resolution that was passed and to condemn the invasion of Ukraine. But the last resolution did not really favor Ukraine that much. Even though it had majority of the votes, it did not really favor it because many countries then abstained from the vote or were neutral to it. That shows that countries are changing their policies in Africa towards the Ukraine crisis. One of the reasons being we've seen rising incidents of coups. So before 2022, we had fewer numbers, but now we have Guinea there, we have Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, and together with Eritrea, which has always voted in favor of Russia. And then now Sudan. Initially, Russia supported the rebels in Sudan, or the RSF, but currently they've switched. And now they support the government of Sudan, currently based in Khartoum. And so it means that Sudan is either going to support Russia or abstain in order not to offend Moscow. So these are some of the things. And many other countries that even voted against Russia are now abstaining or trying to be neutral. So in the two crises, there are going to be two approaches, different approaches. One, in the case of Palestine, is going to be the reiteration of the two-state solution. And in the take of Ukraine, it looks like many African countries are trying to abstain. Yeah, so I think that this year's UN General Assembly, Africa countries or African heads of state should focus on making their intentions clear to any interest in Africa, any external interest in Africa that want to scramble for resources, that want to trade, that want to invest. Because often we are so fragmented that state external actors come in and then take advantage of each of the individual countries. But when we are that united, I think that there's going to be that kind of homogeneity with our goals, and we are going to be taken more seriously. So I think that this is the time African leaders, yes, they all have the right to mount the stage, but they must hold some talks before doing that, so that they really communicate to countries out there that the Cold War politics that happened in the 20th century, for the second half of the 20th century, is gone. Currently, if there's going to be a new Cold War, which other people are talking about, it must be, well, Africa's interests must be put to the fore. And that would depend on African leaders themselves, and they must communicate this clearly.
What should Africa's then long-term kind of diplomatic goals be within the UN system? Because like you mentioned, you know, there's so many divisions within on the continent. Everyone is like for themselves, and which makes it very difficult actually to have a united voice if you are to achieve anything at the UN. So what should the long-term diplomatic goals be within that so difficult UN system that you know very well?
Currently, if we are to do a detailed analysis of the whole UN architecture with Africa in focus, you would know that if Morocco is even to be part of the African bloc at the UN, Africa would have about 55 member states at the United Nations. Now, per the current composition of 193 member states of the United Nations, it means that Africa alone would constitute about 28.4% of the entire UN member state system. This tells us that, in essence, Africa should be controlling more than a quarter of everything or every decision that is made at the UN level. But we know that that is on paper, but in reality, that does not exist. Why should the most dominant, the countries with the most member states, or the country with the most members at the General Assembly, be the one that perhaps, or the country that, the continent that is most represented? Why should it be the least powerful at UN General Assembly meetings or at the United Nations? So if you look at this arrangement, Africa has a voting right, and it should be able to leverage on its voting rights at the United Nations. Africa should not go into the UN as member state. They should go as a bloc. Number two, Africa needs strategic regional cohesion and representation. Why am I saying this? South Africa, by its industrial might, or let's say Egypt, by its industrial might, cannot just go and advocate for trade arrangements or agreements at the UN level because they believe they are industrial nations and it might suit them. No. Africa needs a representation, one voice in unity and in accord. And if Africa is able to achieve this regional cohesion, like I told you earlier, even ECOWAS is fragmented as I speak now. We don't know if Morocco is even part of the AU, and there are other tensions and divisions within the AU bloc. We know of the long-standing political tensions between Nigeria and South Africa and all of you that exist are there. If we are to benefit fully from the UN level, first we must put our house in order. A house divided against itself shall not stand. If we are able to put our house in order, if the Eastern Bloc of Africa, the Western, the Southern African Development Cooperation, our Northern brothers, if we can all come together and achieve that solitary identity as the African bloc, we would have a foundational basis to demand for what is rightfully ours at the United Nations level. And then we Africans enhance the technical and diplomatic preparation before going to the UN level. And by so doing, I'm talking about Africa investing in human capital and technical expertise.
DW's Isaac Mugabe, security analyst Fidel Owusu Amakia, and international relations expert Michael Kado Kentia, many thanks for that very insightful discussion.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
As the UNGA marks 80 years, Africa must decide. Are we here only to be counted or to truly count? The stakes are too high for business as usual. This is Africa's chance to claim influence, not just attendance, to move from the margins to the center of global decision-making. That's it for today's edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember, you can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Kalechi. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
For mine.